First fight on the card, Jessica Rose Clark versus Julia Stolyarenko. Stolyarenko is a former Invicta FC bantamweight champ. She joined the UFC in 2020. She's 0-3 since then, dropping two unanimous decisions and also losing one but via submission. To be fair, the UFC threw her into the deep end of the pool right away. She's in a must-win situation here against a fighter in Jessica Rose Clark, who is going to be desperate to get back into the win column after her submission loss to Stephanie Egger in her last outing. That loss ended a two-fight winning streak for Clark. She was favored in that bout, would have been on her first UFC three-fight winning streak had she won, but she basically said she froze up in that contest, so we'll see where she is in this fight. She has said that she's addressed the issues that basically were performance anxiety issues and that she had kind of ignored them before that. She still experienced them, but she ignored them because, well, she was winning. And when you're winning, it's easy to ignore little things like I was not in the right mindset for that fight. But the loss to Egger forced her to, allowed her to address those issues. And she says she's in a better mindset because of that, and she also added some jiu-jitsu training to her program for this fight. So she's, from the sounds of things, Jessica Rose Clark is going to be much more prepared for this fight than she was for Stephanie Egger, so we'll see where that goes. Clark is favored in this matchup. Middleweight bout between Brad Tavares and Dricus du Plessis. Tavares has been with the UFC for a long while. How long, you ask? Well, his second fight was against Phil Baroni. So 2011, to be exact, is how long he's been with the UFC. So a long time. He's coming off back-to-back decision wins, but he hasn't fought in nearly a year. He looked great defensively in his last outing, a win over Omari Akhmadov. He limited Akhmadov to 28% significant striking rate and stopped 7 of 9 takedown attempts in that bout. He's going to need that defense against du Plessis. In two UFC fights, du Plessis has two knockout wins, and he lands at a good clip, 5.07 significant strikes per minute, and his takedown rate is 2.99 per 15 minutes. So that defensive acumen that Tavares had against Akhmadov, he's going to need it in a big way against du Plessis. Tavares is not going to get a feeling out period in this fight, so if he has any ring rust, du Plessis is going to knock that off of him because he is an aggressive fighter from the get-go. The booking feels like the UFC wants to see what it has in the 28-year-old du Plessis. He's 16-2 as a pro with 16 finishes, 7 knockouts and 9 submissions, and he's never gone the distance. The odds in this one are very close, and it's essentially a pick 'em. Moving on to the next fight, Jessica Eye and Macy Barber. And if we're talking about fighters who need a win at UFC 276, then you can put Jessica Eye right in that column because she is desperate for a win. She's on a 3-fight losing skid, and she's 1-4 dating back to 2019 when she was knocked out in horrific fashion in a title fight opposite flyweight champ Valentina Shevchenko. Just a nasty, nasty knockout that very memorable, but not one that was pleasant to watch. In her only win since that loss, she missed weight. So I is in a bad spot here. She's not fought since July 2021 when she dropped the decision to Jennifer Maia. She's struggled with her health over the past few years, and she recently found out that she had mold in her stomach and a parasite, and she's dealt with both of those things. So the 35-year-old says that she is in the best condition of her career, and we'll see how that plays out against the 24-year-old Macy Barber. Barber started out strong in her MMA career. She was 8-0 overall and 3-0 in the UFC. However, she had losses to Roxanne Modafferi and Alexa Grasso. Then she bounced back with decision wins over Miranda Maverick and Montana De La Rosa. Barber is still young enough that she can shake off those losses, but each time she loses, it's going to be increasingly difficult for her to shake off those defeats. And so she needs to start getting some consistency here. I thought, and I still think a little bit, that Barbara has been a little too active for her age, and that what she has been doing has been training to fight and not training to improve. And those are two very different things. So if she has gotten away from the training to get a booked fight and training for an opponent and more trained to expand her skill set, which I think she really needs to do, she's going to be better off. But as long as she's just training and taking fight after fight after fight, I think she's in a bad spot, and I think her team needs to get her out of that spot and focus more on improving her as a overall fighter than focusing on getting wins. I think that now that she's 24 and she can no longer become the youngest UFC champion, which she said was one of her goals, I think that she'll have a different focus. I hope she'll have a different focus on her career now going forward, and that knowing she needs to get better and not need to chase a championship that's not going to happen anymore. Barbara is more than a 2-1 favorite in this matchup. Uriah Hall and Adrian Muniz. This is a weird fight. Let me rephrase that. This could be a weird fight. Uriah Hall has been one of the more inconsistent fighters in the UFC in recent history. He's either excellent or average. And in this fight, he cannot afford to be average, because Muniz has been anything but average in his four UFC fights. He has 3 first-round submissions in a row heading into this fight, and he is a nasty, nasty man on the ground. And if he gets Uriah Hall on the mat, it's probably going to be a very short night for Hall on the ground. So the odds favor Muniz here, but you never know what you're going to get with Uriah Hall. And well, that's one of the reasons that Muniz is the favorite, is because you never know what you're going to get with Uriah Hall. And so his inconsistency has hurt him, and he's gone from I think he was a main event in his last fight where he fought Sean Strickland and lost, and now he's fighting on the prelims of a pay-per-view. So again, that is all down to his inconsistency and the up and down nature of his run with the UFC. Jim Miller and Donald Cerrone, which is going to take place at welterweight and not lightweight. It's a rematch of a 2014 fight between the two. Cerrone got the better of Miller in that fight. And the story in this fight is really the uncertain future of both men. Miller, who was supposed to fight Bobby Green at lightweight on this card, doesn't know if he's going to have a contract after this contest. And if he does, he doesn't know what's going to be on that contract. So in short, this is the last fight of Jim Miller's UFC contract. And I think that's ridiculous. I've covered that elsewhere. I just think that Miller is a fighter who the UFC should hold up as an ideal and tell other young fighters that, hey, this is the guy you want to emulate. They have decided against that. I think that has more to do with the current ownership of the UFC than anything. But again, that's something I discussed in the past, and you can check that if you want to. I'll put the link up that above, and you can click on that if you want to hear my opinions on that. Cerrone, on the other hand, he's 0-5 with 1 no contest, and he hasn't had a win since May of 2019 when he beat Al Iaquinta. So this is a very important fight for him. Again, he's someone who the UFC, you know, could hold up to as someone who is always going for a finish and always going to fight whenever he's asked. A little bit of that has died off over the past few years, but still there was a time there when if the phone got picked up and it was a matchmaker for Donald Cerrone, he was going to say yes, and he was going to fight, and he might not win, but he was going to give it his all. But it's a very weird time for both of these men. Cerrone's been stopped in 4 of his past 6. Miller's on a 2-fight stoppage winning streak here, and Miller is the favorite. Ian Garry and Gabriel Green. No one believes in Ian Garry as much as Ian Garry believes in himself. And having confidence as a fighter is, well, that's something that you need. Without that, you're pretty much a done deal as a fighter. He's 24. He has a bit of a Conor McGregor thing to him, but he's a young man, and I think he'll lose that over time. He's 9-0, extremely green, very hittable. But the thing with Gary is he knows that he is extremely green, and he's addressed that in his post-fight interviews. He says he knows he has a lot to learn, and that's a positive. So, yeah, he's confident, but he's not confident to the point where he just thinks he can do whatever he wants and he's going to walk out of the octagon as a winner. What he needs to show improvement on here is his location and distance management. In his last fight, he let his opponent dictate the pace, the location, and he can't allow that to happen going forward. That's a way to lose a decision in the eyes of the judges. If you're constantly backing up or you're constantly letting your opponent dictate things, the judges are going to notice that. And even if you're landing the better strikes, it can sometimes work against you. We've seen it happen too many times. But so he needs to manage that better. What he also needs to manage better is his defense. He can't let his chin hang up in the air, and that is something he does. He's hittable, and if someone can connect, he's going to go down. So far he's been, I guess, lucky, because that's not something that a UFC caliber fighter should be able to get away with. Gabriel Green, he's still young, and he's coming into his own. He's 29, but he's kind of been limited. He's only fought, he didn't fight at all in 2019, fought once in 2020 and once in 2021. He's already fought once in 2022, and he got a come-from-behind knockout win in that fight. It was his fourth career knockout, and so he has the power to catch Gary on the chin, and if he does so, this could be the first loss in Gary's career. I don't think that would be devastating. I think that it's a kind of a learning moment. I think Gary's might be one of those fighters who needs to lose to fully grasp where he stands and fully grasp what his weaknesses are. At his age, a loss is not the end of the world. And in fact, a loss, you know, might be better here. Well, it'd definitely be better here than in the future if he ever gets into the rankings and he loses in a devastating manner there. Well, it's harder to get over that. And it's also harder to adjust your game plan and your techniques when you get older. It just is. So now is if Gary's going to lose, and I'm not saying he's going to, but if he's going to lose, now is the time for that to happen. Brad Riddell and Jalen Turner. Brad Riddell's rise up the lightweight ranks came to an end in December when he got knocked out in the third round. Before that, the City Kickboxing product was on a 7-fight winning streak, and he's the number 14 ranked fighter in the division right now. Turner is not ranked, but he's on a full run of 4 straight stoppage wins, and he has a finish at all his victories. He's coming off a March TKO win over Jamie Mullarkey. Turner has advantages in reach and height. He's 6'3 and has a 77-inch reach. Riddell is 5'7 with a 71-inch reach. And Turner also lands more significant strikes per minute, 6.51 compared to Riddell's 4.76. Turner is a extremely composed fighter. He's going to need to count on that against someone like Riddell, who has speed and power. And I also think that Riddell is going to have a huge chip on his shoulder going into this one just because of his loss in his last fight. Possible fight of the night here. Riddell and Drew Dober served as the final prelim bout ahead of UFC 263. And that fight took home fight of the night honors. So this could be a repeat kind of thing for Riddell. But Turner is the favorite in this matchup. Robbie Lawler and Brian Barberena. A lot of people were upset that this was on the prelims. Well, it's now going to be on the pay-per-view. It got there because the Miesha Tate-Lauren Murphy fight fell off. But whatever, you know, Robbie Lawler and Brian Barberena, two exciting welterweights, probably the fans' main event. And there's a lot to like about this one. It's not going to be all that important for the rankings, but what it is going to do is it's going to be entertaining. And what it'll do also is it'll let us see what a 40-year-old Robbie Lawler has left. His last fight was a less than a matchup against a less than top form Nick Diaz in September. Before that, I think he was on a 4-fight losing skid, and so he really needs a win here. I think Lawler is one of those guys that'll probably get a longer rope from the UFC, even if he loses here. He made his UFC debut at UFC 37. Dana White has always been a huge fan of Robbie Lawler, and the fans have always been huge fans of Robbie Lawler. So an interesting matchup, not an extremely important matchup, but a fun one nonetheless. Pedro Munhoz and Sean O'Malley. This is the fight that Sean O'Malley, we've been kind of waiting for Sean O'Malley. This is the fight where Sean O'Malley more or less takes the training wheels off and sees if he is ready to go up against the elite of the bantamweight division. O'Malley is, I think, ranked, I'm not sure, he's ranked in the bottom of the top 15, but Munhoz is ranked at number 9. But Munhoz is 2-4 dating back to UFC 235, and while that record is not fantastic, keep in mind that Munhoz has garnered 4 Fight of the Night bonus awards during that stretch. So he is going to be aggressive, and he is going to come out and put the fight on Sean O'Malley. He's still a threat at 135. His 5.5 significant strikes landed per minute is nothing to scoff at. However, where he might have issues is his 6.09 strikes absorbed per minute. And that's something to pay attention to, especially since O'Malley averages 8.26 significant strikes landed per minute. One thing that O'Malley needs to be aware of here is that Munhoz is a big calf kicker. And if we're still worried about O'Malley's ability to take calf kicks, Munhoz is going to find that out. So this could be a very telling fight for Sean O'Malley and his ability to take calf kicks and to move on from those calf kicks. The thing that's going to maybe stop those calf kicks is that O'Malley has a huge advantage in height and reach. And if he uses that correctly, Munhoz is going to be just kicking air. So we'll see how that plays out as well. This is the test. This is the test we've been waiting for Sean O'Malley. If he passes this, he's probably going to be up in the top 8, and things are going to get real for the young man after that. So O'Malley is a significant favorite in this matchup. Expectations are high, and if you know Sean O'Malley, you know he thinks he's going to walk away with a big win in this one. So we will see. The thing to also consider here is Munhoz has never been knocked down. So O'Malley might want to temper his attacks a little bit just to save himself some energy, because the odds are pretty good, unless he catches Munhoz flush, that this fight is going to go 15 minutes. Sean Strickland and Alex Pereira. If the 34-year-old Pereira hopes to get a MMA matchup against Israel Adesanya, who he beat in kickboxing, he needs to beat Strickland in this matchup. The question here is Strickland going to fight to his opponent's strength, or is Strickland going to fight smart and take the fight to the mat? My money says Strickland fights smart, tangles with Pereira a little bit on the ground, on the feet, just to get him a little comfortable, and then he shoots for the takedown and just takes advantage of Pereira's weaknesses on the ground, because he's fresh in MMA and doesn't have a background on the mat, and Strickland can exploit that, and I expect Strickland will exploit that, because we know Sean Strickland really doesn't care what people think about him, and if he fights a fight that will get him labeled as boring, I don't think that matters. What I think matters to Sean Strickland is that he is the number 4 ranked fighter in the division right now, and a loss is going to hurt him very badly just because of his style. It's not an exciting style, even when he does strike. He just pretty much jabs away and wins via jab. So Strickland's kind of the guy that's going to take a long time to get a title shot, and he can't risk losing his position. And the safest way to keep that position is to take Alex Pereira to the mat and just ride him out and maybe submit him. Pereira is the favorite, though, and So that's very interesting. Co-main event, Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway. The storyline in this fight is, will Alexander Volkanovski finally be able to put Max Holloway in his rearview mirror and focus on establishing himself as the best or one of the best UFC featherweight champions in history? Because right now, it just seems that the UFC and maybe even the UFC fans want to see Holloway as the champ again. And I understand that to a point, because Holloway is a entertaining fighter. His output, his volume, his striking ability are otherworldly. And so fans want to see that. They want to see that kind of fight. On the downside, that kind of fight that kind of fighting style eventually catches up to you. So I don't know if this is the fight that it catches up with Holloway. But I also know that in those two previous fights, that volume was not there because Volkanovski shut that volume down. I don't think that's going to change here. I think City Kickboxing and the other teams that Volkanovski has worked with are smart enough to know what they're getting into. I think they've seen the best of Holloway, and I think Volkanovski is still improving. And so therefore, this is the fight where Volkanovski's career will either pause or rocket forward. The champ is the favorite in this trilogy fight. In the main event, we have Israel Adesanya and Jared Cannonier. This is a desperate Cannonier, I think, is what we're going to see. He's getting up in age. He earned this title shot. It's good that he got the title shot. But this is it for him, I think. If he doesn't win, this is his first and last title shot. So I think he knows that. I think his team knows that. I think Adesanya knows that. And so I think Cannonier is going to be extremely aggressive, and he's going to look to close distance, strike heavy, and then sneak back out without getting tagged on a counter. The problem with that is Adesanya is one of the best technical fighters in the UFC today. And so he knows what to expect from Cannonier, and he's obviously going to have been training for that. And so Cannonier has a puncher's chance, but I think it's a slim puncher's chance, and I think that puncher's chance only comes into play if he catches Adesanya being cocky or catches Adesanya slipping. And as confident as Adesanya is, I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to be ready for this fight, and I think he is going to win this fight. And I just don't see Cannonier having the, because of his lack of height and reach, I don't think he'll be able to cover the ground he needs to cover and to hurt Adesanya the way he needs to hurt him. But a desperate fighter is a dangerous fighter, and a desperate fighter with a powerful striking ability is doubly dangerous. And with that, we'll see what Cannonier can bring. As Adesanya is the favorite in this matchup. And that's the rundown for UFC 276. Takes place Saturday, T-Mobile Arena, Las Vegas, during International Fight Week, International Fight Week 10.